Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Rev Midnight Black Mass, a production brought to you by GeorgeWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you discussions and interviews with figures in world entertainment and general pop culture. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Midnight Black Mass.
Smoke the toenails and hair of the wise man under a black god's thumb. We dance like painted puppets. She bleeds orgasm in technicolor, an ocean of alien mystery. We eat the wise man's eyes for sight that we might see the darkness if we kill the lights fast enough. We eat the brain and pray that our eyes can open wide enough. We burn the dry shell of funeral chant. The pulse quickens and we dance as the blossoms fall. The scattering of dust to the winds. The celebration of old skin. I feel every flower that is screaming to consume you. The earth and sky your cradles. The earth and sky entomb you. So is the way of forever. Teeming with simple cruelties. Beatings and cold rooms. Hands and head not found.
Thank you.
ghastly greetings, groovy ghoulies. It is I, the devil you know, the maniacal minister of the occult, the most sinister host on the East Coast, the Reverend Dan Wilson, here for another edition of the Midnight Black Mass. You just heard the legendary and almighty Motorhead with a cut off the classic 1978 album Bomber. That was called Sweet Revenge, the prelude to the show. A little creepy bit called Old Skin. A little interlude piece off of the classic Acid Bath album, Pagan Terrorism Tactics. Got a great show for you tonight, folks. Actor, director, writer, former professional wrestler, former WWE developmental talent, former NWA Wildside star, and a friend of mine, Mr. Tony Salantri, will be joining the show to talk about a variety of subjects later on. We'll have the Muji Movie Minute. We'll have TV Casualty, looking at Batman the Animated Series. And we'll also have the return of the Seance of the Damned. So before we get to all of that, we've got to get through the program notes here. First to the wrestling news. NWA Anarchy last weekend, last Saturday night, national television taping in Cordelia, Georgia. The Hate Junkies returned, let the NWA elite know what was going on. And now for June 9th, the match has been signed. It's going to be the Hate Junkies taking on the NWA elite team of Seven and Brian Casanova with Jeff G. Bailey and Jerry Palmer for the NWA Anarchy Tag Team titles. Also going to be a six-man main event tag team match with my man, the Angel of Death Azrael, Nemesis, and Slim J, taking on the Temptation, Sean Tempers, Bro Newsome, and Jacoby Boykins. And that's the what's going on at NWA Anarchy. The tide's turning for the rejects now. We're about to get our due, and we're very happy about that. You can always find out more, watch episodes of the TV show, et cetera, at NWAAnarchy.net. NWA Chattanooga will return to its new venue in Sail Creek, Tennessee, at Sail Creek Middle High School, making its debut at that facility on June the 22nd for the Big Southeastern Invitational Tag Team Tournament, Big 8-Man Tag Tournament to crown the first ever tag team champions there. But I'll be with my man, the Southeastern Strangler, the NWA Southeastern Champion, Andrew Alexander, as he defends his title against the future legend Kyle Matthews, in a match that Kyle has whined and begged for over and over again. And finally, they've given in and given him a shot. So Andrew is going to show him exactly why he doesn't want to be in the ring with him on June 22nd. Go to NWAChattanooga.com for more details there. Empire Pro Wrestling, Rossville, Georgia. That's where I'm going to be tomorrow night. It'll be 8 o'clock p.m. bell time there. The Rejects will be returning, trying to get back some tag team gold that we lost in a big Four Corners tag team match. Andrew Alexander will be a part of that, as will Strong Style Psycho Tank. You can find out more about that at facebook.com/Empire Wrestling. Before we get over into the music news and then coming on into the Muji Movie Minute, just want to make a brief announcement here. I spoke earlier with the proprietor here of the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network, Mr. Rich Tate, and informed him of the sad news, but happy news. The bad news is we will be leaving the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network. The Midnight Black Mass has had a great home here for the better part of the last 6 months. Actually, the last 8 months. We debuted on Halloween, so the time it's all said and done, that'll be our run time here. And it's been a good time. We've certainly gotten everything across we wanted. We've aired here at the late night, right in the witching hour when all the ghouls are out. And it has been a wonderful experience. However, a new endeavor has opened up. A brand new website coming up called Potty Humor, P-O-D-D-Y-H-U-M-O-R. It's going to be opening up a new podcast network. And the Midnight Black Mass is going to be one of the launching platforms of that, along with, Muji from the Muji Movie Minute. He's the proprietor of this venture, and we also have another podcast you'll be able to hear more about, just exclusively focusing on comic books, called Get Your Pulls. And there's going to be a whole lot more comedians, music. It's really going to be a full service podcast network. So look forward to bringing you more news about that. We will be here through the month of June, beginning in the month of July is when the Midnight Black Mass will be saying adieu to the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network. But I'll keep a good relationship going with these guys. I hope to continue to promote their materials, and hopefully they'll continue to promote mine. But on to the music news. Big headline and tour announcement for the fall already coming out. If you're a fan of thrash metal, the legendary Testament, along with Death Angel and Anthrax, this is a thrash metal fan's delight, have announced that they will be doing a co-headlining tour this fall, trying to hit all over the United States. So they're going to be trying to check that out. Interesting news from Twitter. Former Skid Row frontman Sebastian Bach says he is willing to reunite with the remainder of the band. However, he says that actually 4 out of 5 original members of Skid Row want to reunite and put the original band back together, which leaves you with the question of who is the fifth one? Exactly who is the fifth person in Skid Row that doesn't want to make the reunion happen? I care a little more about that. And knowing old Baz, he's probably not going to shut up about it anytime soon. Moving on, Bruce Dickinson, Iron Maiden frontman, recently made some, I'd call this fluff news, but it certainly made the blabbermouth and what have you rounds on the heavy metal sites. He claims that he avoids listening to music in his spare time and prefers talk radio, podcasts, and the like. And it caused a little bit of an outcry for metal fans, and I'm like, it's the guy's fucking job, people. Lay off of him. He goes out there still at his age and busts out fucking phenomenal performances. He's perhaps a better singer now than he ever was. He flies the band all around the world. It cut the guy some slack. Look, I've been professional wrestling for almost 15 years. I don't watch wrestling in my spare time. I don't have a fucking thing to do with wrestling in my spare time that other than the work that I have to put in. And in some cases, it's 24 hours a day. But when I have free time, I'm not taking in wrestling for leisure. Not that I don't love it, but I get my feel of what I love while I'm doing my job. And I can certainly relate to Mr. Dickinson and would assume he does the same. So get over it. Moving on to the Black Sabbath controversy, it continues. Just a little more news to something that we've reported previously, in that Bill Ward had all of his images removed from the Black Sabbath website. This, of course, caused a stir amongst the fan base. So, a little more information has come out about this, that it actually was Bill Ward's attorney himself who requested that the images be removed, as there not be any confusion what they were advertising as the current reunion of Black Sabbath that would not include original drummer Bill Ward. So, there you go. And it looks like this thing's moving forward and Bill's not in it. So, I guess we see what happened there. As we said before, we're not going to ever try to take a side in anything like that. So that's all for the music news, fans. We got some more music for you. Speaking of Skid Row, got a cut coming up here for you off what I consider to be their masterpiece. It brings the groove, it brings the heavy as elephant tits, chugga chugga chug, and Sebastian Bach fucking wails. This is off of the Slave to the Grind album. This song is called The Threat. We'll be back with the Moogie Movie Minute.
Generation!
And we're back on the Midnight Black Mass here on the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network, and it is now time for the Muji Movie Minute. Muji, my brother, on the line, how are you holding out there in the zombie apocalypse, allegedly, if you believe the hearsay? Of course, the government has now officially made a decree today that they take the official position that Walking Dead creatures do not exist, but perhaps the news stories have told us different. I think we're out of the woods. I think it's bogus, but I've got my zombie survival pack just put aside just in case.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. You know, got scared there for about a day, started looking for canned goods and whatnot, but yeah, it turns out most people think that it was just some psycho with the bath salts. I think bath salts are about the worst drug phenomenon that I've heard of in a really long time.
Yeah, what the fuck are you smoking bath salts?
Who's the first asshole that was like, let's check this out. Let's roll it up. You know, let's see what happens. But, yeah, for the most part, everybody's saying, you know, I mean, obviously the dude just got high and went crazy. But, you know, my thought is, doesn't matter how, you know, insane you are from the amount of drugs you've done, you know, what gets you to eat somebody else's face? I think the guy already had some zombie characteristics, because I don't think that every person that smokes bath salts is eating faces.
Well, yeah, you know, when the initial news came out, they're like, well, he fucking took 5 shots and then he didn't fucking faze him, you know, and he growled at the cop. It's like, cop had to put him down with a headshot. And we were like, oh, shit, it's fucking happening. You know, get the canned goods, get the Z-Day bag, fucking get the shotgun sales, and let's hold up. But, you know,
that could be the closest thing that we've ever seen to actual zombies. But there's also some studies that I've seen online that were done on the guy. And, I mean, it's kind of a bogus way to say he actually went into zombie mode, but the way the bath salts, apparently the bath salts don't react that way with everybody, and certain people, based on, I don't know, your body chemistry, I don't know all the science of it, that smoking bath salts actually causes an actual virus in you that could cause you to act that way. So technically, he didn't just smoke drugs and go crazy. Technically, the drugs caused his body chemistry to unleash a virus in him, which caused him to do that. So it's pretty close.
Well, just now knowing that that is out there is pretty fucking frightening in and of itself. But in any event, in honor of the overhyped and oversaturated zombie mania that we've seen from every Tom, Dick, and Harry in the country this week, so, you know, now, something that you like is liked by a bunch of uncool people, but whatever. But we watched a great film, in my opinion, the remake from, I was a 2002 remake of Dawn of the Dead, one of Zack Snyder's really big splashes onto the scene. Tell us about it, Booch.
Yeah, it was 04, the Zack Snyder Dawn of the Dead. It was his first actual feature film. You know, Zack Snyder, great director. Of course, you know, after that, that was his introduction. He did 300, Watchmen, is about to do the new Superman Man of Steel movie. I think Dawn of the Dead is the remake is a very entertaining film. I think that it actually, I would say it's one of the best remade, you know, horror movies. I mean, movies in general there's been. One thing that I have, though, that's, you know, I think it's a little different is, they basically just use the Dawn of the Dead title and set it in a mall, but, you know, 90% of the movie is totally different. It's not really so much a remake, you know, other than the fact that they just, you know, use it basically to reboot the Romero zombie franchise.
There wasn't a lot of, correlations. Like, you know, even in a lot of remakes, you can kind of, like, point, well, this character is kind of inspired by this. There's not really any of that in the remake of Dawn of the Dead.
No, absolutely not. You know, the main character in this is a chick, whereas in the old one, it was obviously the star of it was Flyboy, the dude. But they, you know, it's really good. It's probably, I'd be willing to bet, one of the biggest budgets that a zombie horror movie's ever had. Zack Snyder is always really good. You know, he's got that certain style to all of his movies where he really makes the movies look very professional. This one was good. You know, it was different. Even though it was in the mall, there was a whole big, huge group of people, and they kind of went with the almost a Night of the Living Dead theme of, you know, once they got into the mall and got settled down, the theme of really all the really good zombie works, and no matter what medium, was that once they got in the mall, it was really the inner fighting with all of the people that were in there that was the biggest danger, and not the zombies, and that's usually the best zombie movies.
Yes, because we, as people, have doo-doo in our souls. And when left to our own devices, we'll just become fucking animals.
Yes, exactly. And whereas most people in general are very selfish in their everyday life, when it comes to life or death, you know, I'm sure it would get even crazier. And also, the majority of people are idiots. And so, in a real zombie apocalypse, you know, you don't select your crew. And Dawn of the Dead, you know, they just all come together at the mall, so they're together. But in a real zombie apocalypse, you know, you want to single-handedly pick out who you're running with, because all you need is a bunch of assholes to get everybody killed.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. The movie had a good heel, Steve the Dick.
Yeah.
And then CJ, who was the bad boy with the heart of gold, who later turned babyface at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and the movie's cool. You know, it's not even, you know, they take it all over the place. You know, it starts out on the outside, and they actually get trapped in the mall, and then it's got some, the classic scene where they're in the vans, and they use the chainsaw to take out the zombies while they're going, and of course they hit a bump, and the guy chainsaws himself. I thought that was a classic gore scene from a horror movie. There's all sorts of good stuff in there.
I think just like the way they set the fucking tone in that movie, like the first 10 minutes of that, or for the best first 10 minutes of a mini horror movie in a long time, especially when it came out. It just really has that, like, you know, it takes the contrast of just shit's going crazy, and then, like, you know, life is normal, and they go to bed, and basically the shit hits the fan overnight. So, you know, the little girl, the little neighbor girl, she sees coming home from work, this fucking bit and a zombie, and like comes in on Sarah Polley's character and her boyfriend, you know, like right in the fucking morning while they're in the bed. And it's like the way they shot the scene with the dead little girl walking down the hall, scary as fuck. And then, you know, she bites her dude and he fucking goes nuts on her. Like, it was just, and then she leaves, and that's just where everything's just hitting the fan. Like, her whole fucking neighborhood's like dead, and they're fucking chasing the living people, and there's explosions, and, you know, she's...
Yeah, and all of the scenes of her fat old lady neighbors is out on her lawn, like, running and waving for help, and she just gets tackled by a zombie. Those are always fun scenes. Yeah, it was really good, and it was really right at the beginning of the, you know, the crazy zombie phase that we're in now. So, of course, The Walking Dead is kind of the heights of, but I think 28 Days Later had come out 2 years before that and was the first, you know, zombie movie in a long time that caught any popularity. And now, you know, when that started, the first few of those were really good. Now, until Walking Dead came to TV, there have been a crap ton of bad ones since the, other than the 28 days, the 28 weeks later, and then, you know, Dawn of the Dead was very good. There have been, and Land of the Dead was good. But in the last 5 or 6 years, they're, you know, one of the things that people start cashing in on. They see, oh, Dawn of the Dead's good, so then, you know, there's only about 100 of them since then, but those things were good, and the things they were doing at that time, too, like you said, when that movie came out, you know, you haven't seen a billion times since then. I mean, you have seen a billion times since then, but a lot of the stuff they did was fresh at the time.
Yeah, and actually, this is kind of a side rant, but, like, you talk about all the spawns that came from the popularity of this movie. I mean, you can just cruise Netflix and see some of the fucking doo-doo that is on there that's just fucking dreck. You know, and it's like, I'll give it a chance because I like even a fucking bad zombie movie. That's totally cool with me. Like, a bad, But there's just a simple premise that they have to fucking follow for even a bad zombie movie to be good. And that's the established rules that they fucking made for zombies. And these assholes don't ever seem to fucking get it right.
Yeah, they don't. You know what it is, man. I'm such a movie nerd, first and foremost, of all my nerddom that I've seen wasted or seen, depending on how life works out, countless behind-the-scenes documentaries on movies and stuff. And, you know, I've never actually been in one of these rooms with just reading and watching DVDs about it. You know, it's so easy to see how these things happen. You know, it's like movies to, you know, a lot of people are just simply them trying to make a few bucks. You know, that's it. It's not like, oh, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to come up with a great idea, see all the dead come out, like, quick, as soon as you can. You know, we need to be ready to make a movie in 2 months so we can capitalize on this. So, you know, they just take the worst, you know, the worst ideas and combine them. You know, it's sit down and go, well, we want to make a zombie movie. Well, what do people like? People like zombies. What if we put a zombie to the school dance? Okay, that's a movie. Make it, you know. And the premises to some of these things are pretty ridiculous. And they take away, there's a fine line, too, in these movies where a lot of movies can't decide if they want to make a movie that's kind of making fun of the zombie movement, which is fine because, you know, I enjoy a good, hilarious movie like that. Or they want to make it serious, so somewhere in between. They come up with this plot that's kind of serious, and then they also, though, the zombies suck and, you know, are ridiculous, and then, you know, it ends up just being awful.
Yeah, I agree. So, in closing on the Dawn of the Dead remake, what was the official Muji movie minutes percentage? How well done was that some bitch simmering?
I give it 80% well done. I like it a lot.
80%, folks, can't argue with that. Go pick it up if you haven't seen it. You definitely owe yourself a favor if you're avoiding the remakes of movies because you want to be true to the classics. This is one that doesn't try to be anything it's not. It doesn't try to recreate the Romero classic or do anything beyond it. It's just its own fucking badass zombie movie with a huge budget and a very basic story that does adhere to the rules of the zombie universe for the most part. They got the fast zombies in there, but that's generally accepted now in some circles.
Yeah, and Zack Snyder's good. I mean, this movie's better than anything Romero's made probably since, you know, his Dawn of the Dead. So it's a good entry into the franchise.
Yes, they're definitely worth it. Now, I'm still waiting on our guest, Tony Salantri, who's going to be joining the show here to talk about some the sides of Hollywood and his work in some horror and some other things, his acting career, etc. But before we do that, just wanted to, I'd mentioned earlier to our fans about Potty Humor and the move coming up, and it's been our last month here on GWH. I'm just thanking them for everything they've done to host us here, but Just a little bit of thoughts on Potty Humor, what it is, what we're going to be doing, you know, kind of what the mission is behind this whole thing, and why we're embarking out on our own here.
Yeah, absolutely. PottyHumor.com is the website that we'll be launching within the next few days, very possibly by the early morning tomorrow. Got it. It's all set up, ready to go. The first episode of Get Your Pulls is ready to be listened to. Just waiting on GoDaddy to give the okay to go ahead and launch it. That's who's hosting the site. So basically, as soon as they put it up, as soon as they give the okay that we don't have something you're not allowed to do on a GoDaddy website on there, then it'll be ready to go. But basically, it's starting out with a couple podcasts, and then, you know, who knows where we're going to go from there. It's going to be our own podcast network. It's going to be eventually more than podcasts. Basically, you know, we have a lot of friends who go into a lot of different artistic endeavors, so it's going to be a good place to, you know, host everything. It's not just going to be one thing. There certainly is going to be a comedy podcast, or if you want to call it that, it's going to be sitting around trying to be funny for 30 minutes to an hour, and there'll be some different things that we've worked on. There'll be some different little skits, some movie trailers and stuff like that on there. And then, of course, we'll be moving the Midnight Black Mass over there, which will be different than that, you know, with the radio style program. And then we also have, like I mentioned, Get Your Pulls, which is our just
simply weekly comic review. You know, we'll just be reviewing the our newest things, what we read every week. And that'll be going up most likely on Thursdays every week since we get our comics on Wednesdays. The shows, we'll try to keep them all on a weekly basis. You know, stick to the same schedule and everything like that, which we'll figure out. Also, there could be videos on there. There'll be all sorts of stuff. No exact, yeah. You know, no exact, this is what we have to do, really. Other than we know there's going to be some podcasts, and then it'll be just wide open to whatever sort of artistic things we come up with.
Excellent, fans. Pottyhumor.com, that's where we're going starting in July. I got a huge network for podcasts. Hey, fans, if you got something going on, send me a message over on the Facebook.com/MidnightBlackMass page. I'll be glad to take a look at it, shoot it over to the Mooj Man, and if it's something that might fit the theme of Potty Humor, then certainly it's something that we might consider. So, you know, we're looking to build this thing. Midnight Black Mass, mainly running on a live basis, has been a bit taxing for me, you know, having a young baby around and everything. And, you know, my Friday nights are typically when I get a lot of stuff done. And, you know, it's nice to be able to have the option of recording these things earlier and doing them, you know, at our leisure. And that was part of the move. And it's just, you know, like you say, it's something we've been working on for a while. So really excited about that. Thanks to you for having me over there, Mooj, and I appreciate you joining the show, man. We'll see you next week.
All right, see you, man.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the great Mooj with the Mooj Movie Minute. And ladies and gentlemen, right now, I'd like to bring on our special guest for the evening. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tony Cilantri, welcome to the program, my friend.
Holy shit, Dan, I have not heard that since like 2001, 2002.
Excellent. I was hoping to give you a little blast from the past, man.
Oh, my God. Where's the slow clap? Should I be going out there with Todd Sexton and standing on the guardrails and clapping because Freedom Fright is about to begin?
It's up to you, man. I think you've already been there, but if you want to relive it, fine by me. How you been, buddy?
Dan, I have been unbelievable. I never thought I'd actually be able to enjoy life outside of professional wrestling, but I'm starting to enjoy it, man. I'm starting the directing out here in L.A. Like, right now I'm standing outside the Warner Brothers lot because my girlfriend lives, like, right outside here, and it's unbelievable. It's great.
That's fucking awesome, dude. And, like, we're going to totally get into that here in a minute in the discourse of this interview because I really want to talk about life out there and how it's changed and leaving wrestling and all those good things and just the projects you got working on. We have a whole template of subjects we can discuss here, but I guess we should probably start off with wrestling, being that we're on the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network here, and discuss that because a lot of fans here probably remember you, as you mentioned, from the NWA Wildside days, the TNT, or later on, and WWA Deep South. So what, just all the way back to when you were a little kid, man, what got you into wrestling? What made you want to pursue this crazy dream?
You know, I was always an athlete, and I always looked at wrestling. I remember watching Hulk Hogan versus Ultimate Warrior, and my dad telling me, no, it's phony, you don't believe in it, but there was always something about it that made me love it. And because I always did athletics, I remember being attached to guys that were younger, like Shawn Michaels. And as you know, I was trained by Shawn Michaels in Texas, so I was always drawn to the guys that were smaller. Because I graduated high school at 125 pounds. I was this skinny, nothing kid, and I tried to look towards people that did something. And, you know, when I was younger, I played soccer and I was on the Olympic development team and I enjoyed it. But all of a sudden that attitude area came about and I felt I was pro wrestling and I just felt like I had to pursue it. I would not be happy doing anything else until I tried wrestling, and I tried it. I was good at it. I loved it and just pursued it, man.
And that you did, as you mentioned, right to the Shawn Michaels Wrestling Academy in Texas. Just a brief moment about training under Shawn and the kind of things he instilled in you.
You know, I will say one good thing about Shawn is basically the ring that we trained under was almost like hardwood with like a slight bit of carpet on it. And it was like a still to this day, like if I look back at my wrestling career, that was the stiffest ring that I ever was, that I ever wrestled in. He said, you know, this ring is going to be super stiff, but if you can wrestle in this ring, you can wrestle in any ring. And we were in San Antonio, 120-degree weather in summertime, and he's like, if you can wrestle in this heat, you can wrestle in anywhere. And I guess I can look back at that career and say, you know what, he was right. The fact that that was the hardest ring I wrestled in, the hottest weather I wrestled in, it was all kind of uphill from there. So even though he didn't baby any of us, he totally instilled everything that made it work. And I still remember the first day I ever got there, Brian Danielson, I guess he's called Daniel Bryan now, but he gave me all of his, like, apartment stuff. Like, I slept in his mattress. I had his furniture. Like, he was the first guy I ever met in wrestling, and he was, like, the coolest guy.
And his career's gone on pretty crazily. I don't really follow it much these days, but I know that he's doing a lot.
He's doing well. You know, he was one of those guys who, I think he's the last of a dying breed, Dan. I think him and guys like CM Punk, they're the last of a breed. Apparently, I remember when I signed with Nova, I was signed by Tommy Dreamer, but I remember Nova took over, Mike Bucci, he took over, and, you know, he's even said nowadays that he doesn't even know how guys get signed by WWE, because there's like some kind of, you can actually go online and fill out an application to be a wrestler. And that was just crazy to me and you back in the day where you had to, like, pay your dues. But Brian is the last of a dying breed that truly has traveled around, paid his dues, and it's going in a new direction. I don't really watch wrestling anymore, but he's, like, the last of a dying breed.
Yeah, it's good to see a guy like that in that spot. And, after you got done with Texas, you came to Georgia. Did the NWA Wildside thing. A lot of fans probably listen to this show are remembering that because we do a lot of Wildside tributes on here. We've had a lot of the different guys on and just kind of reminisce. And what are your memories of that place and the time us crazy college-age kids spent together there?
It was. I can tell you this. I can tell you what one mistake was in wrestling that I had. And I can contribute it to Wildside and to other places before WWE. For me, the only thing I ever wanted to do in wrestling was to wrestle for WWE. And so I was tunnel vision. Like, I would not enjoy anything else until I was with WWE. So all the time in Wildside, all the time in California, all the time everywhere, it wasn't enjoyable to me. Like, even when I went to Japan, I was staying in my hotel room thinking, okay, I got to watch, like, some old Benoit and Jericho footage from, like, the Super J Cup in 94 because I want to be the best wrestler. I never enjoyed the life. So I remember when it was like me and you and Todd Sexton and J-Dog and Rain Man and Homicide and Chad Parham and Izzy and Slim J, all of those guys, how we all used to have that apartment in Atlanta. We called it Apartment 8B, and we all used to hang out after the shows and enjoy ourselves, and I never enjoyed it because I'm like, I'm not in WWE. I can't enjoy this yet. So I really wish I could go back in time and enjoy those moments because we could have had a lot of fun. So really, when you're tunnel vision and you only care about the destination and you don't enjoy the journey, by the time you get to that destination, you're going to be miserable. I hated WWE because I never enjoyed the journey to it.
Yeah, I mean, that's unfortunate to hear. I hope you look back on some of those times fondly because, you know, we did have a good time. But, I mean, I know what you mean. You know, you were trying to fucking get to a place. You were going balls to the wall. You weren't putting on no pageantries for nobody. You know, you were going to go and get what you wanted regardless of what happened. There's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, once Wildside ended, the Deep South Wrestling thing came along, you ended up going there. You ended up getting signed to a developmental deal. And you just talked about being a little bit miserable at WWE, and you're out of the business. I'm not trying to get you to, you don't have to say anything you don't want to. I'm not trying to get you to eat with nobody. But just, like, your experience there, like, if it was, as like, you know, everybody that strives for the WWE as a kid, you know, when they finally get there, sometimes fear that it's not what they expected. And
yeah,
you kind of alluded to that.
You know, it's weird. This is almost a cool thing because I have never really gotten to talk about my experience with WWE. I mean, with maybe people in this acting, directing, Hollywood business, I've talked about a little bit, but I've never truly gotten to talk to anyone in wrestling about it. And it's so different from anything else. Like, I look back and now the developmental is Florida, and Florida is so much different, the way Deep South was. And maybe if I was in Florida, maybe things would have been different. But I tell you, I butted heads with Bill DeMott so much, and it just, it made me hate the wrestling business. I mean, oh, man, there's so many stories to tell. But, you know, it wasn't the way I think wrestling should have been. But the one thing with Bill DeMott, and I almost wish he would – I would love to be on the phone and talk with him about this. But Bill was someone, when he was in development and he was in charge of everything, he still wanted to be a wrestler. You know, he was not ready to put the wrestling aside and be a trainer. And so he would bring us out, and I don't know if you remember me, but I remember, like, guys would drink and guys would smoke, and I sometimes didn't want to do that because I'm like, no, I'm an athlete. I gotta be prepared. So when I went to WWE, literally the first time we all went out and drank, I had one beer, I started to hiccup, and Bill DeMott, like, right there knew he owned me. And, you know, he would say, you're going to drink this until you puke. You're going to drink. And he would, like, force me to drink alcohol, and I would be throwing up. And, you know, he would be like, I mean, literally, like, I'm like, no, I'm not going to drink. He would, like, rip open my shirt in, like, a bar and just start chopping me over the bar and forcing me to drink. It was, like, the most random shit you would think of. And all I wanted to do was be a good wrestler. You know, all I wanted to do was be the next Shawn or be the next Jericho, be the next Benoit. But there's this game that you have to play. And I wish I knew more about that game. But the good thing is, now that I'm out here in L.A., I understand that game way more. And with anything in life, any business, it's all about playing this game. You know, for me, I had this athlete mentality that, you know, if you're a baseball player and you can hit 100 home runs a season, you can be Barry Bonds. You can be the biggest athlete. I don't know if we're allowed to curse on this show or not. I don't know.
Have you heard every other word that's come out of my mouth?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, you can be the biggest asshole in the world, but you hit 100 home runs a season, you're going to get that contract. And I looked at wrestling like sports. Like, as long as I'm a good wrestler, that's the only thing that matters. So when I got into Deep South, you know, I look at all the guys on TV now. Kofi, his first match in Deep South was with me, and I had to carry him during it. And, you know, I was a great wrestler, but I was horrible at playing the game. And unfortunately, you know, you got to play the game in order to make it. And I didn't understand it at the time because I got signed to Deep South at 24. I was just a kid, man, and I wasn't ready for it.
And so, like, when you finally hit the breaking point and you decided to just completely give up on wrestling, where was your head at? What, like, you just come to a crossroads in your life and you had to make a decision. What kind of toll,
you know,
did that take on you?
It took a huge toll. I mean, I remember, you know, I want to say that my wrestling career start at Wildside. I mean, I trained with Shawn. And I wrestled kind of in IWA Mid-South, where Punk started a little bit before Georgia. But, like, Bill Behrens, whatever people want to say about him, he was the first person that really gave me an opportunity to be somebody and the first person that gave me a chance to be on TV. So I feel like I started with him. And after everything I did, I remember I had almost come full circle. I was wrestling for NWA Anarchy at the time, and I was making $15 a show. And guys like Zack Ryder, MVP, Luke Gallows, all those guys that I was, I want to say carrying in developmental, but whatever we want to call it, I was out wrestling them. And they were on TV making their lots of money, and I was making $15 a match for Bill Behrens. And I'm like, fuck, I cannot be doing this. I'm 27 at the time, making $15 a show. I can't be doing this. All the love that I had for wrestling, I didn't love it anymore. And so I said, fuck this, I'm leaving it. And it's like the girl that I was with at the time was only with me because I was in WWE at the time. This was the type of girl that had the big boobs, you know, the whole girl that will meet you outside a show. And all of a sudden she didn't want to be with me because I wasn't a wrestler anymore. And everyone that was in Deep South and WWE, they stopped talking to me once I said I'm done with wrestling. Looked around at me, and I'm like, everyone who was anything to me is gone. I mean, literally, I was living in Georgia in, I don't even know what town, it was like a small town surrounded by trees. I was by myself, and I wanted to end it all. I think we all have insecurities, and anytime you're trying to pursue something that's very difficult, there's times that you're upset, there's times that you're positive, but man, that was the only time in my life that I wanted to take my own life because I was by myself. Everyone in wrestling was gone. I didn't know what I was going to do anymore. It was probably the lowest point I ever had, and it was tough. I mean, I had to literally get a job just to get a side job as some server. And I remember going into this all-you-can-eat buffet. I was a server, and I went up to this table, and they're like, aren't you Tony Santarelli? I'm like, yeah, I used to. And like, didn't you wrestle for Deep South? You used to be that wrestler. I'm like, yes, I am. Do you want a refill on your sweet tea? And it just was humbling and crushed me, man. It was crazy.
Yeah, God, I can only imagine. Well, first of all, glad to see that you made it through the issues you were having. You know, we all have ups and downs. Mine never related to wrestling. You know, being a what I would call like a ancillary character as an announcer or a manager, I never really had super high hopes, but I always just loved doing it. But, you know, like other shit, like divorces and fucking trips to jail, things like
it
that.
It happens,
have,
man.
You know
there's one
down.
Thing. Yeah, there's one thing Eddie Guerrero told me, and I think it is so true. And I remember sitting down with him backstage, and he's like, you know what, man, I want to tell you something. No matter how much you love this business, just know it'll never love you back the same way. And it's so true, because I never really had a close family. I wasn't close with my family, so I looked at wrestlers as my family. And you know wrestlers can be seedy, can be shady. There's some that are good. There's some that are pill poppers, whatever we want to call them. But it's like I gave everything to the business, and I expected the business to give it back to me, and I was bitter at the time. I remember Bill Barron saying something that wrestling has a lot of addictions. There's pills, there's sex, there's drugs, but one thing that no one talks about, there's bitterness. And I actually got that bitterness addiction from it. And, you know, I needed to step back and say, you know what, I can't be doing that. I can't be upset about it. You know, wrestling is what it is. It's business. Anything else. And you can't hold it personal. It is what it is.
Yes, she is a cruel and stern mistress who is frigid.
Yeah, you know. But you know what? If you just enjoy it, you've got to enjoy where you are. Like, I'm enjoying what I'm doing out here in L.A., but you know, when you're a kid, you know, I didn't truly understand how it was. And so anything, I wish people could have really taught me about what the business aspect was, because what I learned from Shawn Michaels was, if you're just a good wrestler, be the best wrestler you can be in Deep South, like Arn Anderson, Dean Malenko. All these guys would come down and say, just focus on the wrestling aspect. But I really wish someone could have taken the time to say, you know what, yes, be a good wrestler, but just understand how to play the game. And it could have helped so much more. So if anyone's out there, they just need to know that there is a game to play. And, you know, you just got to understand it. The best wrestler will not always get signed, but that's okay, because some guys have it, some guys don't, but you can't take it personal.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it is business, and they're doing what they're going to do. But beyond that, you got out of wrestling. You moved to L.A., as you've mentioned. You started this whole new career. I've seen you doing acting gigs, a little writing, a little directing. You've been all over the place, man. Talk about some of the stuff you've been doing out there, some of the work you've done and the experiences you've had.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I started doing stunts, just because wrestling is pretty much glorified stunts. So you know how to fall in wrestling, you know how to fall on a movie set. But there was just this directing thing, because I remember with wrestling, the one thing I was really good at with wrestling was putting matches together and being able to script that out. And so for me, directing was like a really great step to it. And I've just started to find people. What I've noticed is I'm able to put together a team and get people interested in doing things. And recently, up until about a week ago, we had this feature film we were going to film over the summertime called Acid Brotherhood. You know, we had $200,000 that was ready to go. But unfortunately, you know, we had disagreements with the executive producers about the script, and I decided not to go forward with it, just because it was going to be a muddy picture if everyone has their say in it. You know, you got to have a captain, you got to have someone to lead it. So I decided not to go in that direction. So now I'm actually going to be putting together a horror movie to film over the summer.
Yeah, and I've seen you talk a little bit about that on Facebook. And, you know, you've got to be a fan of horror, obviously, to be wanting to make a horror movie, and we focus a lot of attention on that. What's your favorite type of horror? What would inspire you to make a horror movie?
Without a doubt would be The Exorcist. The Exorcist is by far, to me, the scariest movie of all time, because they actually didn't do any a cheap pop-out. You can easily make someone pop out of their chair. A quick move of the camera, a quick sound, you got to pop out, you get someone to jump out of their chair, but they're not afraid when they go home. Like, I remember the movies that scared me when I was a kid was The Shining. Those two little girls, the little boy Danny turns around the corner, those two girls are just staring in that hallway. That creeped me out. The Exorcist, just that little girl, the camera is just on that little girl. The camera pans towards the door. They open the door. The girl's not popping out anywhere. She's on that bed. You know she's on that bed, but you don't know what's happening, and just the look on her face with the music is creepy. And so to me, imagery is what's creepy. So if you can actually create scary images to a point where you're not going to scare someone out of their chair, but when they go home at night and they're taking a shower, they're going to think that your character is waiting on the other side of that shower curtain, or when they go into their room, that little girl from The Exorcist is standing in the corner just watching you sleep at night. If you can get an image like that, that's what's scary, and that's what I want to do with this film.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, yeah, I'm a huge fan of classic things like The Exorcist. And as you say, it's more than to just scare someone, but to disturb them, to leave them with a lasting impression of fear.
Yeah. And if anything, you know, it's all about what the characters are doing. I mean, what I always thought was cheesy with, like, whether it be alien or vampire movies is, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you see something fall out of the sky and the characters run inside the house and they all say, "What is this?" And one character says, "Well, don't you realize it's aliens?" And that to me is fake. Like, how would you in real life jump to that conclusion? Like, you wouldn't. You would try and do everything else first. And so The Exorcist took this little girl, and they didn't all of a sudden jump to the conclusion and say, "Hey, this girl is possessed." No, they tried every medical possibility, and they narrowed everything down until possession. And that, to me, is what's real. So we actually have a story about a schizophrenic young man who fears that he's turning into a vampire. And so what we're doing is we're taking it from a medical perspective, like the Exorcist, and they go through every test possible. And when there's nothing else left and they can only determine that it's one thing, then you actually give them the scare. But you got to make it real first, you know? Otherwise, you're like this guy saying, "Don't go into that room." And the character goes into that room and you don't feel bad for him because, you know it's fake. So,
yeah. I love it. I love the ideas, and I wish you the best of luck with that, man. I really hope you can get that off the ground, and I definitely want to see it when it's done.
Yeah, no, we've got actually execs on this one, so we're good to go. So we're putting the script together. And when this is good, we're going to shoot this summer, and I'll shoot you the trailer, man, when we get done. But this one is a go. The other one, you know, we were going back and forth with the execs, but I've got people that are good to go on this one. So we're going to have a fun summer shooting some horror out here in L.A.
That's awesome, man. And what else are you looking to pursue beyond that? Looking to just keep making movies, looking to get back into the acting side of thing, or do you really think you found your home as a director?
You know, I think I found my home. I mean, we all, you know, I loved wrestling. It's so weird. I don't know if you even watch TNA anymore, but I actually live with Dave Marquez, who actually runs NWA Hollywood. And okay. I don't think I'd ever want to go back to wrestling. But Dave was watching something on YouTube today, and he was watching, I guess there's a TNA gut check. And there was actually a wrestler named Joey Ryan. Have you ever heard of Joey Ryan?
Yeah. I've worked a few shows with him here and there.
Yeah, Joey, you know, I remember him from Pro Wrestling Guerrilla and from UPW, New Japan Dojo, and Joey is doing this gut check, and he was watching the YouTube clip of Joey, I guess, being in front of Pritchard and in front of Al Snow and in front of Taz doing the gut check, and it's almost like an American Idol thing saying, "Do you think this guy should advance, yes or no?" And, you know, one guy said yes, two guys said no, and I saw it in Joey's eyes, man. I saw tears in his eyes when they said no, and it's just like, man, I don't want to go through that again. You know, the wrestling business is cruel. And the truth is, you know, we have a short time. It's like you got to do what you love. And I found that I am super skilled at directing. You know what? I'm just going to pursue it with everything I can, pursue it the same passion I pursued with wrestling, but I'm going to enjoy the process. So if I ever do get, like literally right now I am standing on one side of the Warner Brothers wall. If I ever get onto the other side of this wall, I'm going to enjoy it because I'm actually going to enjoy the journey up to it. So that's actually what the one good thing from wrestling is I've gotten to travel around the world. You know, guys that I grew up with in high school, they've done nothing, and I've done, in my mind, everything. But the difference is, when I get to the other side of this wall, I'm going to enjoy it because wrestling taught me to enjoy the journey.
Excellent. So, that's great to hear, man. I'm so happy to hear that you've got shit rocking and rolling out there, that you were really focused, and you seem to have all this stuff. You know, life changes, and we do. Like, I look back on those early days, like maybe even, you know, I think of times when I got caught up myself in the wrestling bullshit. It's like 15 years almost in it now. I just could give a fuck. Like, I'll just say anything to anybody, and just I don't care because I've done my time. I have fun doing it, but I'm not going to play the fucking game. Just had a baby girl back in December, you know, like I want to spend time with her. I want to do the things I enjoy. I'll do wrestling. I still enjoy it, but I'm not going to fucking break my back over it anymore.
Well,
you know?
You should not, man. You should not. And to be honest, I mean, when you see people that have died that you knew, like we both knew Trent Acid, and I don't know why, but man, when he died in 2010, it affected me so much, literally to the point that project that I was telling you about is called the Acid Brotherhood. And the lead character, the lead bad guy, is called Trent Acid because I want Trent's name to live forever in something that I do. So when you see guys that you used to hang out with, and Trent was like 21, 22 when we were hanging out at Wildside, and to see that he died at 29 from like a heroin overdose or something, it's just like, man, his life is over. And it's just like, I remember my life could have been over when I was debating about, you know, killing myself after wrestling. So it's like everything that I'm doing now is all on the house's money. It's all like I won the lottery, and it's like, fuck it, go crazy because you're not even supposed to be alive anymore. So I'm truly enjoying myself because guys like Benoit, Jericho, Trent Acid, Lance Cade, Umaga, all these guys are fucking dead. And if I was still wrestling, I'd probably be dead too because I had to fucking take so many steroids just to even get a chance in WWE because they all want big guys like Batista. So everything I do from this point is gravy, so why even waste my time feeling bad when it's all just on the house's money? So I'm enjoying life, Dan. And for the first time, because I know you remember me when I was just this depressed kid saying, I'm never going to make it to WWE and this and that. Well, now I'm like the opposite. I'm like, I'm enjoying life. I'm at Warner Bros. I'm a director. And I'm having a good time, and I'm enjoying life, and I'm enjoying the journey.
Yeah, I mean, you're right there in the center of the universe, man. I mean, Los Angeles, California always has been the most happening place to be and will continue to be. So keep making it happen, man. And thank you for joining the show. I would like you to keep us updated on, you know, your future things. If you ever want to come back on the show and plug anything you got going on, my forum is yours, my friend.
Dan, I would love that because, to be honest, if for some reason, if for whatever reason, these execs fall through on this horror project, I would love to pitch it to your fans because if there's one thing I know the wrestling business can do and the wrestling community, they all do come together. I would love to make this film happen. So if for some reason these guys don't go through, I would love to tell the listeners about this. And if they want to help me spread the word and help me raise money or do whatever for it, I would love to bring it to your guys' attention. So you know what? In a couple months, I'd love to talk to you and tell you, hey, this is where I'm at. And, hey, maybe we can all help each other out and make this movie happen because, you know, the wrestling business, we're not like the rest of the people. Whether or not you and me, whether we're in the business or not, it's still like its own thing. So if you've been a part of the business, you're a part of some kind of family. It's a fucked up family, but it's a family. So.
Yeah, it is. It's like, you know, we'll fucking stab each other in the back, but by God, don't you fucking jump on one of us, you know.
Exactly. But, you can make fun of your friends, but no one else can make fun of them type of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, man,
you know what, Dan?
Awesome.
Yeah. Cool. I appreciate your time, man. And again, in a couple months, I want to talk again to you guys and just update you where I'm at.
That sounds great, buddy. We look forward to hearing from you. And thank you again, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tony Salantra, joining the show for the first time.
I appreciate it, Dan. I'll talk to you guys later.
Thank you. Have a great one, man.
All right. Bye.
All right. Pretty revealing interview there from Mr. Tony Salantri, known formerly Tony Santarelli from Deep South Wrestling. He was Tony Stradlund and back in the NWA Wildside days, you know, and he had a lot on his mind and he wanted to say it, and he's a friend of mine, so I give him the opportunity to do so. But we're moving on. Show's not over yet, folks. We still got a little bit more on this journey. I'm going to take you through the TV casualty, where we look at Batman the Animated Series. I'm going to pull out the old Ouija board for old time's sake and try to conjure up some more spirits for Seance of the Damned. But right now, you're going to listen to Slayer, and you're going to like it. This is Die by the Sword off the classic Show No Mercy.
The law. another. A standoff beats for time. Then all at once, a silence falls as the bell ceases its chime. Upon the sign, the challengers, with shrieks and cries, rush forth. The knives fly out like bullets upon the deadly course. Screams of pain and agony rent the silent air. Amidst the dying bodies, blood runs everywhere. The figure stands expressionless, impassive and alone, unmoved by this victory and the seeds of death he sowed.
Tony Santarelli, formerly of Deep South Wrestling, going by his real name out in Hollywood, Tony Salantri, making movies, if you will, and a very revealing interview. Had a lot to get off his chest. I'm glad we could provide a forum for him to do so. I had the Muji Movie Minute talking about the zombie craze and Dawn of the Dead remake from 2004. And now it's time for TV Casualty, where we take our extended look at the DC Comics animated universe. Been rocking and rolling with this thing, and we're still going strong on season one of Batman the Animated Series. The episode up this week is called See No Evil. It was written by Martin Pascoe, originally aired on the Fox Television Network on February 24th, 1993. Basic story of this, per Wikipedia, this is their recap just to give you an idea of the plot. Lloyd Eddie Ventrix is on the verge of losing his daughter Kimberly to his ex-wife, Helen, due to his past as a con artist. Determined not to lose Kimberly, Ventrix dons a suit stolen from where he used to work while on parole, which grants the user invisibility, but also becomes highly toxic. It poses as Kimberly's imaginary friend, Mojo, while stealing jewelry for the little girl. Can Batman solve the mystery crimes and stop Ventrix, and at the same time save his life, despite the fact that he cannot even see him? And so we find out. Batman, of course, is the world's greatest detective, so he puts the pieces together and figures out this man, Lloyd Ventrix, is indeed using something to make himself invisible, but this poison that is killing him slowly and driving him a little bit mad at the same time. Batman sees that he's a good guy. He's got to try to save him, and you know how that goes. Basically, it all boils down to a big final showdown in an abandoned drive-in theater. Mojo, the imaginary friend, reveals his face, telling little Kimmy who he really is. Kimmy recoils since her mother has already told her father is a bad man and that she doesn't want anything to do with him because he's been to jail. Ventrix tries to drag her into the car when Batman catches up with him. Ventrix lets her go. Kimmy runs back home. Ventrix gets into his car, which is also sheathed in the plastic and turns it invisible before driving straight at Batman. Batman manages to jump onto the roof of the car, which crashes after a wild chase. After driving off a set of elevated train tracks, the two men end up on a roof beneath a water tower, and in a fury, Ventrix beats Batman severely and refuses to listen as Batman tries to warn him about the danger from the suit that he's wearing for invisibility. Finally, Batman throws a trio of bat stars into the water tower, causing a shower of water that does short-circuit the suit and reveals Ventrix. With his foe no longer invisible, Batman turns the tables and viciously pummels Ventrix into submission. On a later night, little Kimmy is talking to someone outside her window, saying that she and Helen will be moving away to where Ventrix can't find them. Helen rushes in, alarmed, and asks who she's talking to. Kimmy says, "Batman, Mama." Helen says, Helen, who has been hearing Kimmy talk to Batman a lot lately, doesn't believe her, not knowing that this time, at least, Batman is outside on the roof of the house. And there you have it, fans, another edition of TV Casualty, as we move further and further into the mythos of Batman the Animated Series. I like that episode a lot. Always, you can count on Batman the Animated Series to deliver the complex villains. And Lloyd Ventrix was that. You could see that he was really trying to do good, but he didn't really know anything other than a life of crime. And the more he used that suit, the more that they poisoned him. And that became a real big issue in the sense of running into Batman. You're stealing jewelry, you're acting like a crazy person, you're stalking your little daughter, even though it might be with good intention. The Dark Knight's not going to let that slide, you know. And we'll be back next week with another edition, next Friday night, of TV Casualty. We will be taking a look at the episode where the famous Adam West, the legendary Batman of the 60s and 70s, made a cameo in an episode called Beware the Gray Ghost. A very cool Batman the Animated Series episode, and monumental for the tale of two Batmen, and that it's probably the first and only time that Kevin Conroy, the man famous for voicing the animated version of Batman, and Adam West, the man famous for portraying the classic 60s-70s Batman, appeared in the same program about Batman. So, very cool. But we've got more tunes for you. You heard there, as we were coming out of the break, Die by the Sword by Slayer, and then also we doubled that up with the classic The Sentinel by Judas Priest, as covered by Machine Head off the 2011 album Unto the Locust. All excellent tunes. You need to go to iTunes.com and pick those up. Going back to another 2011 album by the band Graveyard, always got to love the Europeans, bringing some good old-fashioned rock and roll. It's a somber tune off the album Heises and Blues. It's called No Good Mr. Holden.
And show me your moves. Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Soley? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Symphonies of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling at the Academy Theater in Avondale State. We're also at the Masquerade every month or so. Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling. And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
Lord of the
the underworld. You are the African god who controls the powers of the undead. You actually have the power to raise the legions of the undead hordes. There's been a lot of commotion surrounding some wild attacks in the U.S. that many say are the beginnings of a zombie apocalypse. Since you are the deity who controls these undead legions, is there anything that you'd like to say, any truth to this? Just for confirmation's sake, please.
Absolutely not. What you have here is an example of the completely incompetent U.S. media. A crazed naked man bites a man's face off, sounds like a zombie. Takes several shots to the chest and is only killed by a shot to the head. Sounds like a zombie. So far, so good. But then the man who was bitten was taken to the hospital and treated. He did not become a zombie. People who cut out intestines and throw them at the priest, not a zombie. Smoking bath salts, not a zombie. High on meth, not a zombie. You get the picture here. Are you seeing any sort of pattern?
Well, that's good to know. I thought I was going to have to bust out my Z-Day prep kit at first, you know. It's still probably not a good idea to come limping into my yard anytime soon, listeners. But Mr. Damballa, since I have your audience, you would be the authority here. Do I have anything to worry about in the future? You know, zombies are kind of like my number one fear.
That all depends on one human, Mr. George A. Romero. Mr. Romero? If you ever make another zombie movie as bad or worse than Survival of the Dead, I will have no choice but to unleash the real thing on the world to remind them how it's done. The Walking Dead on AMC is the only thing that got you out of Survival of the Dead. You understand, had it not been for Robert Kirkman and the AMC crew who made this wonderful television show, then I would have already unleashed him, sir. Mr. Romero, you are an icon. If you make another Of the Dead sequel, I just ask that you hold it to the same standard as your originals.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us, Mr. Damballa. We bask in your presence and all that jazz. We thank you for joining the show, and we're going to close this portal very quickly before something very bad happens.
Wait a minute.
Whew. You gotta be careful with those gods, you know, like seventh level demons are one thing, and fucking, you know, ghosts, you get ghosts all the time, spirits of humans, you know, they're just essentially us, just transcended onto the next plane, but when you're talking about deities, you just don't want to piss them off, let me just tell you that, and I didn't want to come dangerously close to pissing off Mr. Damballa. But that's all for the program tonight, fans. Thank you for joining the Midnight Black Mass as we plunge away into our final month here on the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network. Again, thank you everyone who's been involved, and we'll list a big, long love fest as we head out of here. But I'm going to leave you with a little Iron Maiden. We mentioned them earlier in the program. Very excited to see them coming up later this month on June 23rd. With the legendary Alice Cooper. So I'm going to leave you with a classic tune off of the Somewhere in Time album. One of my favorite Maiden tunes of all time. This song's called Wasted Years, fans. Keep one foot in the gutter, one fist in the gold. This is the Reverend, and I want your soul. I'm out. Thank you.
for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.